Jack gets along with people, that's yeah. where.
Well, you know, the other feature of Illinois that I think was, it wasn't unique, but it was a very important part of, was the fact that you insisted that your students go somewhere else, your undergraduate
undergrads,
students.
Undergrads, yes, that's right.
And that, therefore, you were sending good students out all over the place because you had a lot of good undergraduates, yeah. and that's another reason why you were able to get good with a horse trade back.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a extremely useful, wise policy, and it's what I learned in Illinois, and so many schools try to keep their best students.
Because I know when Elliot Alexander came out, he kind of fussed about that for a while, but he got over that. Yeah. He decided it wasn't a bad idea at that.
That's an excellent. That was a very good policy.
A lot of our seniors were better than the first year graduate students we got. That's what he was objected to, but he found out that they grew up.
Yeah. Overall, it was a very beneficial for the Illinois program.
Yeah. Of course, you sort of were richer than most other programs. A lot of people have to feel, at least, as though they have to keep their students just to survive because they aren't getting them from all these.
Well, we were horse trading. We were good horse trading.
Yeah. Well, that was smart.
They didn't give them away.
You got somebody back.
Yeah. And the chief were too smart to give them away.
At any time did you feel in your own work that you were competing with other chemists elsewhere, that you were in a race?
Yes and no. Not really, seriously. You just went ahead and did your job.
Okay. You just worked on the problems you were interested in.
That's
and if other
right.
people were...
I never got interested in the problem because that was supposed to be a hot problem. I got interested because I thought it was fun.
Okay.
And there were no other people in Palmer in those days.
Right.
We were the whole business there.
How much time were you able to spend on research? I mean, how did you usually...
I can't answer that. We generally had about, at the most, 2 lecture courses.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the time was with research, and you generally worked from 8 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock at night,
yeah.
Saturdays and Sundays included.
There wasn't too much else to do, champagne or man, but we also enjoyed it.
It was fun. I generally had Saturday afternoon off to go fishing, but the rest of the time I worked, because it was fun.
You actually got married kind of late for, you got married.
No, I was married, but I had a family, but I didn't. And I was married again later on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Raised a family later on, but I didn't have any family until I was 40 years old.
Yeah, that's what I was...
First wife, you didn't have any children.
Oh, okay. I guess it was the second wife that I knew about. Yeah, okay. How did you fund your research?
Faculty, the university paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have
grants early in those days.
You didn't have to go to write proposals. You'd get money out of the government then. Nobody did. All the students at the beginning were paid for by teaching assistantships. Later we got fellowships. The first postdoc I ever had was an interesting case. Monsanto wanted to hire a boy from Illinois. And Curtis, do you remember him? He was one of the big shots in Monsanto. He called me up and asked me, and I said, oh my God, don't hire him, he's no good. And I got a letter from Curtis the next day. He said, that's the first time I ever had a faculty tell me the truth about a man. He says, how would you like to have a postdoc next year that Monsanto would pay for?
You saved him a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's the first postdoc I ever had was the one that Monsanto gave me because I sold this because it was no good.
Because you were honest, you see. Honesty pays.
You wouldn't dare do that nowadays. They'd sue you, but...
You've got to be damn careful these days.
But it was over the telephone.
You had to do that in the telephone where it wouldn't be recorded. Yeah. It's just ridiculous. But
mm-hmm.
You just have to not say anything nice. And then they know damn well what you mean.
Yeah.
Let's see. You began to consult with DuPont in 1928. You
hadn't
done
right.
any consulting before that?
No.
And that came about because Adams helped you out
Well, it was a very interesting thing. They wanted Adams to come to Wilmington every month and consult with him. Rogers says, that's too much travel. See, in those days, you had to go to train. Mm-hmm. He said, that's too much travel. I won't do it. So he and Stein argued about it for some time. And finally, Rogers says, why don't you hire two of us to Illinois? One come 1 month and go. On the next, we can exchange ideas at home. Well, Stein says, I don't know. Who else you got? So Roger says, I think Barbara will do it. He didn't know who Barbara was, but he says, all right. And I got my job that way.
I guess the relationships worked out all right.
Well, it seems to. I'm still going.
Roger consulted there for the rest of his life, didn't he?
Pretty near. Toward the end, after the war, but he didn't do much there. But.
Tell me about the kind of consulting you've done with DuPont. Did you start out with the Palmer Group? You knew Carruthers.
Well, I did with him a lot, but I in the early days it was all organic chemistry, really.
I see.
Now it's practically all Palmers.
Okay, so you were consulting with other groups aside from the Palmer Group.
In the early days, yes, all organic chemistry.
Okay, and the kinds of problems that you...
Oh, God, I don't know, whatever they were. But
okay.
I never knew till I got down there what they were going to ask me about.
Okay.
And then I gradually shifted from central research to textile fibers and the plastics group and the film group and the electrochemical group. And at the time, I was consulting 30 days a year with various parts of the company. Film on it, circle build, textile fibers in Camden, textile fibers in what's that other place in North Carolina. I can't think of where Nacron's made, and Niagara Falls for Elkem and Buffalo for film, and all of those places. I was spending 30 days a year with them.
I see.
And then the last 2 years, I did too much work. I said, I'm going to just shift back to only the central research.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now I do it every other month at central research, except I don't come down in the wintertime anymore. And also, sometimes central research will load me out to some other part of the DuPont company in Wilmington so that they'll come over and I'll spend a half a day with them out of the 2 days I'm here. So I do yet have contact with the polycarbon and textile fibers by a visiting arrangement through CRD.
Mm-hmm. The work you do back in Arizona.
I try to avoid anything that will conflict with what I might do here. Once in a while we run into
I see.
Things. But
you don't, your program there is not...
I try to avoid it.
Okay. And that's always been the case?
Always been the case.
I see. Okay.
Although they sometimes paid me to do certain... They gave me research help for a long while. I had... One time I had 13 postdoctors working with me and Tucson and half of them were working on DuPont money. But I've quit that. That I've cut it down. Now only have 3 people work with because it just don't work that hard.
Okay.
And it's also, I've been doing with the Air Force and the Army so long that they're pretty good about renewing it. In fact, the last contract I had with the Air Force in Akron was they sent me a proposal and said, if you'll send this back to us, we'll fund it. So I didn't have to write a proposition.
How very nice.
It's very handy. Practically, they say, do what you want to do, and we'll pay for it.
Okay. When DuPont gives you had given you money for postdocs, do they expect you to work on...
No,
again,
what
again?
I wanted to work on.
Okay, fine. I suppose it kept you... interested. The 30s must have been pretty exciting around here. Can you sort of describe some of the things that...
Nylon and neoprene, good interest in it. And you learned a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Carruthers was smart then.
Uh, Now, you were primarily interested in synthesizing polymers.
That's always synthesis is my game. That's okay. All I know.
Okay. And then there were people like, I guess, Florey and later Mayo who were interested sort of...
Physical polymer chemistry.
And then there were the people who measured the polymers, like Mark. And I guess even Mark says there were the appliers as well, those people who figured out what to do. Were there much... Did you interact with the others?
To a considerable extent, yes. Mayo was a very good friend of mine, and Mark was a very good friend, still is.
Sorry, it was 2 months ago up at the meeting in Midland.
He's very
Mark, he's still great shape.
He's very active. Yeah. And of course, Florey did his first work with Carruthers. He never was a polymer chemist until he started working for Carruthers. That's where he got his start, polymer chemistry. Yeah. And I knew it from that time on.
Florey had done what? He was an organic chemist before?
No, he was a physical chemist with somebody at Ohio State. Yeah. Who was, I can't remember the man's name now, but
yeah, I think I've got some.
He later was head of the department, and then he went on to somewhere in, I don't know, some southern school profile. I can't remember his name now. He was not a polymer chemist at all. He never had any experience in polymer chemistry. Mm-hmm. So he came down and started. They signed him to Carruthers Group. And he and Carruthers got along fine, and that's where he got interested in polymers.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Now, DuPont was in fact funding Mark at Brooklyn Poly.
Yeah, he used to be a consultant for DuPont.
Yeah, I was wondering why they didn't bring him here in the first place.
I don't know, but as a matter of fact, he didn't continue with DuPont because he talked too much.
Uh-huh.
Okay. That was really the reason.
Often wondered how Herman managed it. To be the courier for a whole industry and still remain a consultant to these
companies.
Well,
that's one reason we didn't keep on with DuPont. He just talked too damn much. They like him and all that, but they didn't want to confide in him too much. With me, I've never had any problem with them. I've talked to them about every problem they ever worked on. Some of them are very secret. Some of them don't talk to another division about it. But I've always been open with them. In the early days of consulting, was interesting. When I started consulting with DuPont, the chemists themselves hesitated to talk to you because they thought you'd hone in on their patents.
Mm-hmm.
They found out you didn't. The first thing you knew, you were signing the patents that you made suggestions on that you'd forgotten yourself. But they put your name on because you made suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
But first they didn't want to have any help that would interfere with their patent rights.
I see.
They thought you were going to sneak in on them, but that disappeared because they found out I wasn't interested. It didn't make a difference to me whether you never look at anybody out of patents anyway.
Well, I think that's the secret of being a good consultant, Steve.
Don't pay any attention to the patent.
Yeah, I always try very hard not to.
If you make a suggestion that's patentable and they put your name on it, you can't help it.
Yeah, but otherwise.
Never ask them to.
Yeah, and that. Is why I got along so well as a consultant. I'm sure that's why they'll open up to you then.
They
know that
you
you're not going to try to steal their ideas.
Have you noticed, either one of you, that industry has begun to cut back on academic consultants to any extent?
Well, they've cut back on all chemistry, as a matter of fact. I know a little bit more on that than everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Chemistry just is not as good as it used to be, Charlie. Not as high a rating, do you think? In particular, organic chemistry. I think it's suffered a hell of a lot the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
We need some good new ideas, definitely.
Yeah. That's interesting. A few years back, I'd asked Paul Bartlett that, and he said, it'll come back. He says, all we need is some.
We
same
need
thing.
Some good new ideas. It's just not as good as it was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. An awful lot of good people are going into applying organic chemistry to biochemistry.
Oh yeah, that's a big deal.
That's where an awful lot of good people are going.
And there are a lot of money going into that. DuPont is spending a lot of money that way. It worries me because I'm afraid they're not getting enough leadership in that field. Now, an organic chemist can do the work, but they need somebody that thinks biochemically to lead it. And I'm afraid they don't have enough, and I fuss about it every time I have it. Get more leaders in biochemistry to help you. You know, they tried to go into physics, and they never got any good physicists working for them. And they've never done very damn much in physics, do you think? I don't think they have. They got some good stuff, but they're never outstanding. They don't compare with GE, for example, in physical organic.
In the 30s, did you notice any changes in the organic chemistry at just in general or at Illinois? Were they beginning?
Well, they began to be more physical organic and less synthetic as that time goes on. And the students themselves are not as much interested in synthesis as they used to be, which I think is a mistake, but then maybe that's because I'm prejudiced.
Mm-hmm. Was there a conscious decision to start to hire people with a physical orientation?
Oh, yes, to some extent. Everybody thought you had to be a physical chemist to do some theoretical stuff about everything.
Because
as a matter of fact, polymer chemistry has a very low standard in chemistry general, I think. For example, the National Academy, polymer chemists can't get elected. We've had a lot of good polymer chemists that should be members of the Academy, but they're not. They just don't cater to it.
Did they ever have another polymer chemist at Illinois besides you?
No.
You were the only one?
They never put anybody in instead. Now they have to hire somebody from outside to come teach polymer chemistry in the summer every once in a while. Several people have gone out and give summer courses in polymer chemistry, but they have no polymer chemistry there.
Well, I suspect you were the first one that was hired with a physical orientation.
Yes, I was. Well,
pretty close to it.
Pretty much so, I would guess.
Was Alexander ahead of your body?
He followed me. He was my replacement. Yeah. And he was, of course, even more.
Curtin was supposed to be a physical organic, but he never did too much of the physical side of it after he got out there.
Yeah, he had.
But that got to be the popular part of organic chemistry through that area.
Curtin also came after I left.
Yeah.
He was one of my PhD students.
Oh, he never did as much as he ought.
Yeah. Right. He's
smart.
His work has been good, but it's been pretty sparse.
Pretty sparse. It never lived up to what we expected, I'd say that.
Yeah.
Elliot Alexander, I think, would have been a great man.
Oh, he would have been an outstanding.
He was a ball of fire. But
yeah.
Dave was very
enthusiasm was very good.
Do you remember where you hired him from? We were just having that discussion.
Yeah, DuPont.
DuPont.
That's what I thought. He was DuPont for several years.
Okay. Well, I don't know how he happened to share a lab, or Jack Roberts talked about fighting with him continuously at Harvard. So,
yeah, he was at Harvard. He got a PhD. Did he get a degree with Cook?
That's what I thought. We were thinking. Yeah.
Maybe he was a postdoc.
Postdoc at Harvard. That's what I would have thought.
Then he went to. We got it from the station.
I know we hired him from the station.
Okay.
That he was a Koch PhD that went to Harvard for.
Right. Okay.
And you and Jack Roberts would have had great discussions.
Now I think we should talk a little bit about what happened during the war years. Because I think that had a big influence on what you did later on.
Well,
and also
it turned me completely to polymer chemistry, I would say.
Yeah. How did you happen to get involved in the
Well, at first I was up in Canada fishing. I got an urgent telephone call to come home, go to the National Defense Research Committee work under Adams. He was.
Okay, now this was at what time, at what point? This was
fall of 40, wasn't it? Yeah.
Okay.
When they set up the National Defense Research Committee. And I was the leader of the synthetic group in the National Research.
Roger was the
head of that whole
Oh, chemistry.
Yeah, National Defense Research Committee. He reported to Conant, who was head of the both the medical and the other at that time. And I was supposed to do the synthetic work and do the manage the program and get people to work for it.
This was in rubber now, or
no? This was just National Defense Research Committee in 40.
Okay.
Well, I didn't like that job. It was a stinking job. And
what kind of synthesis were they interested in at that time?
Oh, chemical warfare agents and all sorts of chemistry that had to do with war work, incendiaries, chemical warfare. I don't know what all everything came under there. And then we were going to get into biological things like rice and the various ones. And I remember the one that out of the National Defense Research Committee, they called. I would come to Washington. I'd go to New York every Monday, and I'd come to Washington every Wednesday, and back and forth and back and forth. And I get a little damn tired 5 nights a week on the train. And I got home one Wednesday. I had any morning got home, and they called me up and says, "You got to be back here Friday so you can set up a big program with on rice so we get."
Rice?
Ricin. R-I-C-I-N.
Oh, ricin, the toxic.
Right. Toxic material, castor oil, yeah. Castor beans. Well, I said, all right, I'll be back. And I came down, the people from where was it? One of the industries, I forget now which one, working on. And we got a program arranged, and money set up and sent back the request. Damn it, they said, well, we don't have any money. I said, what the hell did you ask me to come back in a hurry for if you don't have any money? Well, it made me mad as hell, and I said I wasn't going to work for them. I just wrote up a resignation and quit. Well, Roger didn't like that very well. Conant liked it even less. But I said I was going to quit, and I did. And I was down here to finish that off in December of 41. I got a call from, oh, what's the fellow that used to be the rubber director, you know, up at MIT.
Not Bradley Dewey.
That's it.
Bradley Dewey, yeah.
He called me up and says, you got to get over here and work on this polymer business. You're the only organic chemist in the university who has a reputation for polymer. I said, I'm tired of government work. I'm not going to do it. Well, he says, you have to. Well, I said, give me a contract for $100,000 and plenty of men that don't know, and I'll do it. My God, the next day he called me up and says, you have it. So I had to go to work.
I had to do it, huh?
And so I did shift from the...
That's how that rubber program in Illinois got started.
That's how it started.
Uh-huh.
And I got Charlie to help me. We got Wall to help me. We got Lightman to help me. We set up a big program, and we really did a hell of a lot of good work.
Were the other guys Wall and who else?
Fred Wall.
And Herb Lightman, an analytical man. And, of course, Snyder.
Even Hal Snyder did some work on that.
Yeah, and Rab John and Snyder and the... Bob Frank and the fellow Carlin was there. All of those fellows helped, and we set up a big program. We had, I guess, about 100 people working there. And we did a lot of good work, I think. And I was sort of the coordinator as well as running a certain amount of myself.
So essentially, there was a very large group in Illinois,
and were
you coordinating work
with MIT? There was Avery Morton, and Cornell with Gloria in Dubai,
and Minnesota,
Karash in Chicago, Kulto, Minnesota, and a fellow at this fellow Marin at. Case.
Oh, yeah.
And
M-A-R-O-N.
And some of the industry, of course, Goodyear, Goodrich, Firestone, and U.S. Rubber. And we all worked together, and it was a very friendly, cooperative group who didn't hold back anything. They said, now don't try to pass all the information out. Publish what you got. and make it general. And that's what they did. They all pitched in. And nobody tried to get any, claim any credit for any part of it. If you had an idea, you passed it on, and they passed it on. And we'd be often divide up the work to get the next program going. We'd be about once a month. They liked the meat in their banner because I made better old fashions than anybody else. But it was a very cooperative program and a very, very unselfish program, I would say. And all these people helped. And things developed surprisingly well. I know in the early days I said to fellow, what was this man, Williams, who was coordinator then from Bell Telephone. I said to him, well, if we can't produce rubber in a year, we're not as good as we ought to be. And oh, you didn't think we'd do that, but maybe we'd get something. In a year we had a rubber that was workable.
Mm-hmm.
I said, we're poor chemists if we can't do it.
That's
we got
remarkable.
It done.
That's remarkable. Yeah. Did you have?
We improved it, but we had one that would work in mm-hmm. a year.
Did you, you have pilot plant sort of things out there, or you just did straight?
Well, we just synthesized and got the products and sent them to the rubber companies to test.
I see. Okay.
The testing was nearly all done by the four rubber companies.
So all the research that you were doing during those war years was primarily
synthesis
of rubber and I guess some analog
rubber
and
products and adhesives and other things that needed to go with it.
Okay. Now, Charlie Oberberger was part of that
he
program?
He was a student of mine.
Yeah, at that time, yeah. Okay, because I know
Bill Bailey
was a student of mine.
Ah, okay.
They were both postdoctors on that program with me.
Okay.
And we gave jobs to Charlie. He ran some of them.
I just did a little side bit on the mechanism of emulsion plumbers.
Yeah,
that's about all I did when it was.
Well, and Bob Frank had some stuff on modifiers. And Carl and Rab John did on ozonization. And
Al Snyder did it on the anti groups for the mercaptans
We didn't know what the hell the mercaptan was in there for. It was OE.
One essential ingredient.
We didn't know why the hell they wanted it until we found out.
Well, what was why did they put the mercaptan in
there?
Lauryl mercaptan, which regulated the molecular weight.
I see.
So it didn't get
it stopped costly. One chain by putting
transfer.
Hydrogen on.
Okay, and transfer.
And the RS
would
start a new chain.
Right. Okay.
And
we'd get the right molecular weight so they could work it the build.
Oh, okay.
That's nobody knew what it was in there for.
Straight.
But you also had to have it to make that sulfate work.
Oh, I see. Somebody just put it in there, but nobody knew what it was doing at the time.
Well, we got the information from Germany.
I see.
Was a very interesting thing. The SO people had a little private conversation with the Germans.
Just
and they caught hell later because they didn't cooperate with the Germans. God damn it, we got the lead on how to make it. Synthetic rubber right that way.
Oh, I see.
That was the lead that got us into the good.
I don't know whether the Germans knew what that did or not. But
I don't know, but we
didn't. It wasn't known to us, certainly.
No, we didn't know what it was. OEI, and we had to find out. Some people thought it had to do with regulated 1214 addition.
Mm-hmm.
And we found out what it was.
Control the molecular weight very neatly.
I see. And that was work. You had done. You found that out. Did you know what the ingredient? You knew what the ingredient was.
We knew what it was, and we knew it was OEI. But
okay.
But we didn't know why it was there until we started working.
Yeah. You were working on gases as well. You were working on.
He worked on National Defense Research Committee.
Chemical warfare.
Yeah, right.
I had two other major things that I was working on. I was working on chemical warfare agents, mainly on how to get rid of them.
And also on the malaria
and on the malaria program. Those were my two main
Well, I got into the malaria program later. They wanted somebody to help with synthesis there, and they asked me to take charge of the synthetic program as hired people to work on it.
Okay, so you
not
didn't
to tell them what to do, because I didn't know with this contract to work.
Okay, this was after you started the rubber work.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, we had a lot of good people working on that malaria program. Nelson Leonard worked on that, and Beckelhide, who's out in Oregon, and had a good group working on the animal aerial.
Oh, it was a good group, and they did that damn good
work. Had Bucklehide come to Illinois?
He's a postdoc.
I see, because he'd come out of Stamtarp? No.
He went to
Rochester.
I forget where he came from.
That's right.
Minnesota, I believe. He worked with Lee Smith, somebody in Minnesota.
I believe so.
And he came down and worked on our animal aerial.
He was a postdoc with Adams and got into that.
Got into animal aerial work because he needed a deferment.
Yeah.
Well, my job also was to keep all those boys in Illinois deferred.
Right.
And I had to work on that all the time.
But he got us some good.
So he kept people there. We only lost about one man to the Army during that time, and he was one that got disgusted with it and said, I'm going to the Army to hell with this no more deferment. But we kept a lot of work.
That's,
I remember one day